Welcome to 167 Hours Beyond Sunday, a podcast hosted by Crossroads Christian Church in Gray, Tennessee, where we try to go beyond the 1 hour we're in church a week and talk about life in the rest of the 167 hours. I'm your host. My name's Ryan Evans, and today I'm joined again by our Connect Minister, Patrick Mitchell. Last week, we had a conversation around social media, and unfortunately, it just went far too long. But this is part two of that conversation, and I think there's some very interesting tidbits, especially about parenting with social media. So without further ado, here is the continuation of that conversation. Enjoy. So next statement I want to get your response from is this. Despite having more access to information than ever before, we're misinformed often.
Yeah. So to me, what this comes down to is there's a layer over top the information that causes what we would call misinformation. Hmm. So because all information has to be interpreted.
Yep.
So you watch the news, you watch one station, let's say you watch Fox News, and let's say I watch CNN. We can't help but smile because it's just funny because neither one of us probably watches either.
No.
But but we would imagine that both of these news stations have the same information, but what they are reporting is their interpretation of the information.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true for articles that we read on Facebook or on, you know, the podcast that we hear. Not this one. This is all pure and true. But yeah.
Haven't you heard our sourcing?
Yeah.
We've cited
our citations
so well.
Are legit. But you're getting interpretations. And so we tend to gravitate towards those interpretations that we feel like are going to bolster what we already think,
mm-hmm.
which is why, for the most part, Fox Newsers watch Fox News. CNNers watch CNN.
Mm-hmm.
BBCers watch BBC and are mourning the passing of Prince Charles.
Yeah.
You know, and so we just get locked in, and it produces this, I talked about it some in a sermon a while back, but the echo chamber effect, into which we only hear voices like our own. And so that, again, that drives us deeper into the tribalism, into being this camp, that camp, that this is how conspiracy theories gain steam. I mean, QAnon is inexplicable apart from this entire phenomenon. And if you watch, and I would encourage you all out there, if you're here listening, watch, you know, some of the interviews of people who have kind of come out of it and gone, I didn't even know it was happening. But I was losing family members. I was losing longstanding friendships. And I was convinced that these things that I was hearing and reading had to be true. And it was, again, just this slow progression, this drift.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you're only hearing what bolsters what you've already believed. And if that's true, then this could be true. And then that could be true. And then before you know it, behind every corner, there's a boogeyman.
Yeah.
And that's how it happens.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like with social media, like with the Facebook, you know, even the news outlets, unfortunately, a lot of the driving motivation behind why they do what they do is not to provide correct, thoughtful information.
Right.
It's to get viewership or clicks or it's money.
It's to get viewership, and it's not to convert you from this other site or yeah. this other source. They know exactly who they're going after.
Well, I mean, you know, telling the truth in an unbiased way isn't very exciting.
No, and it's really hard too.
And people aren't really interested in
yeah.
that, you know, but very grabby headline where, you know, yeah. so-and-so is a horrible, that's way more likely to get clicks, and clicks leads to ads, and ads lead to money.
Yeah, ads lead to the money.
I was talking to my dad not too long ago, and we were talking about this problem because I was saying, you know, like, if you just watch a news programming and you don't actually do any research to verify mm-hmm. what they're saying, mm-hmm. you know, I'm saying that's completely irresponsible.
Right.
And my dad said, I hate that we have to do that now. It
yeah.
didn't used to be that way. I don't know. I wasn't alive. To be completely fair, but I understand that generational tension where mm-hmm. a lot of people used to be able to trust the news anchors and trust mm-hmm. that they were actually trying to tell you the truth and give you solid information.
Well, and super helpful, I think, when there were like three stations, you know? But I do feel like as rational creatures, God has graced us with the ability to exercise wisdom and discernment, and not just grace us with it, but calls us to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's from more of a religious sentiment, but in 1 John 4, when John tells us, you know, don't believe every spirit, test the spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's talking about religious teaching and interpretation, but it's interpretation.
Yeah.
And it's, listen, just because someone in authority says it doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah.
And doesn't mean it's not being spun in a way to lead you down a certain path or road. And so I'm not saying, okay, go out there and find the God ordained news source. There's not one.
No,
but test the spirits, you know, I mean, really, like if you're going to get, a good view of something, I was talking actually with one of my buddies he's a staffer for, a senator, and, he listens to multiple podcasts a day, from various sides to get the full picture, because even though he is a Republican, he has to know what's coming from every angle and how it's being interpreted and what's being said.
Mm-hmm.
So that his senator is prepared when he goes in to a meetings and when he goes into a hearing. And I'm like, you know what? That's good to know. It's good to know that folks are doing it, but he'll tell you straight up, like, look, there's money. Money is the driver in Washington, like money and power. Don't pretend otherwise, you know? And the same thing's true with media, with social media, movies, TV, it's money. It is not, they do not sit around a table and think, how can we care for their souls?
Mm-hmm. I think if I, you know, going back to that question of what do you think a well thoughtful approach, productive social media participation looks like, I can say there's one thing on that list for me for sure, which is actually reading an article that you're going to share before you share it. Because I think the one thing that concerns me the most is it is too easy to share information now.
It's really easy.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of people are just like, oh, this headline affirms something that I like, so I'm just going to share it regardless of its validity, regardless of the, you know, I had a good friend who was the wife of the police officer
mm-hmm.
go after, the Chick-fil-A. It's not the original. Is it Dan Cathy is the son or Truett Cathy the son? I always forget which one.
Dan Cathy's the son. Truett's the founder.
So yeah. Dan Cathy's being interviewed, and, you know, it was during the Black Lives Matter movement, is having this very thoughtful conversation around the yes. existing issues and how Chick-fil-A is interacting with it. And the article my friend shared, who is the wife of a police officer, says, you know, white Christians need to repent of racism or something. And it's like, that was the headline of the article.
Yeah.
And it made it almost look like that is a direct quote from Dan Cathy. The problem is he never remotely says anything remotely close to that line.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not interesting, right? That's not.
Yeah.
And of course, the friend is like, I can't believe he would say anything like this. And, you know, blah, blah, we should ban Chick-fil-A. And my response is, hey, have you actually watched this video? Because you're giving up some very delicious chicken sandwiches.
Yeah.
And I don't think you need to. You're actually making an enemy that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's like the posts and the reposts and the shares and the comments under is like, did you read the article? Yeah, that's always my favorite. Wait, did you actually read the article? That is, to me, is what is lost, is we have this free republic. We have access to education. We have freedom of speech. And basically what we want to use freedom of speech for is to put others down rather than really engage critically and intellectually and in emotionally healthy ways, complex issues and matters. And I'm like, well, y'all, that's what the founding fathers did. I mean, they were very versed, you know, with different systems and structures you know, this was a great experiment that they ventured out on and lost a lot of relationships over. And I, we do, for those that would say, like, you know, I am a patriot or, you know, whatever, the greatest justice you could do there is to follow that lead and to really explore and be well-versed and well, widely read. Otherwise you just, you become a mime.
And also being comfortable with going against established principles.
Yeah.
That's what that group did.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's went hardcore against established principles.
Yeah. I don't think England has ever forgiven us on,
to be fair, we wasted a lot of tea. Oh goodness. All right. So last statement to, for us to react to here is that despite having more resources to make processes more efficient, we still feel like we don't have enough time.
So I think about this and I, man, I mean, going back to like the Franklins and the Jeffersons and the Adamses, plural, and then even beyond that, like the Martin Luther and John Calvin and Jonathan Edwards and others, I think about like, you know, they've got volumes and volumes and volumes of writings and discoveries and debates. And, I look at all of this stuff and I'm like, they had the same amount of time and usually lived less, lived shorter lives. Mm-hmm. And yet feel like they produced way more. I'm like, but they didn't have computers or word processors or, you know, Shift F7 thesaurus. Like they didn't have any of that.
No.
And I'm like, what is it? Now, I'm not saying there are not productive people today.
Yeah.
But I would argue we are, you know, the Neil Postman book from the 70s. We've amused ourselves to death. We're distracted to death. I mean, like we're distracted to the point of paralyzation. We don't do things. We talk about doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been guilty of that in ministry. Like I can get in these debates and arguments about idealized things of how it should look rather than just going and doing something.
Yeah.
Like just do something. And so I think for now, like that busy, being busy is a social standard as much as what we drive and where we live and where our kids go to school and where you went to college and what you majored in. The status quo is you should be busy.
Busy is, I would suggest, more valuable in most people's minds than productive.
Oh, 100%. And I think we could argue the busier we are, the less productive we are. John Mark Comer is a pastor in Portland who writes about this. He wrote a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, which is a quote from Dallas Willard, who's a deceased Christian philosopher. But it's basically to say we have to vigilantly and violently cut out the hurry in our lives and mm-hmm. the busyness in our lives if we expect to be formed into Jesus, which is our first and ultimate goal as disciples of Jesus, is to become like our teacher, like our rabbi. And the reality is nobody's going to unhurry our lives for us.
Yeah.
In fact, everyone is going to try to hurry our lives and busy our lives more. And so with that, John Mark Comer, he talks about how he's been on this quest to unhurry his life and been very intentional with it for his family. And so now people will ask him, he's been after it for a few years, and people will say, so you're pretty busy right now? And he'll say, no. And he said, people laugh because they think I'm joking. Like the concept that you don't have to be busy is just, it's like, what? I thought you had to be. Isn't it required now?
Yeah. And regardless of actual busyness, you know, it's like, but socially we're supposed to say that we're busy. Like like, that's a thing that we brag about.
Or,
right?
Or we just call it hustling. I'm hustling. I hate that. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hustling. I got a side hustle for my side hustle and I got to get my platform. And, you know, unfortunately all these things are present within the church as well. And you know, I don't know. I just think this, the busyness is doing a violence to our souls that we can't quantify or mm-hmm. qualify. But at the end of the day, I think we all know it.
Hmm.
You know, like for me, like I get to the end of the day working, taking kids places, coaching teams, just parenting, trying to have a marriage. And, you know, Lindsay and I, you know, we go to bed, it's 10 o'clock and we look at each other and we're like, what, like, have we even talked today?
Yeah.
You know, did we have real conversation? I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, are we going to watch This Is Us or
do we have the emotional capacity?
Like, what are we,
what's Randall processing this week?
And I mean, that's honestly it though. Lindsay will look at me and be like, I don't think I can. I think it's just too much. So like, and, but that's it. And then it's like, we feel like we got to watch something to escape our lives, the busyness of our lives. And I'm like, so we just have been looking at each other lately going, we don't want to live like that. Mm-hmm. What can we not do?
How radically different would our society be if we valued productivity more than we valued busyness, right?
Productivity, yes. And just presence. Mm. I think about that. I'm like, you know, okay, we're Christians. We're looking at Jesus. He knew it all. He had all the information. He had the right interpretations. He had all of the charisma that he needed. He had all the skills and abilities. He had the same amount of time.
Yeah.
And he, I like Pete Scazzaro's, the way he talks about it in his Emotionally Healthy, you know, format. Jesus was not selfless, which you hear that and you're like, oh, blasphemy.
Yeah.
But he wasn't selfish either.
Mm-hmm.
He had a healthy understanding of boundaries in which he was able to say, no, no more healing right now.
Yeah.
No, no more teaching right now. No, no more feeding right now. In fact, what he was more likely to say yes to were those physical things of mm-hmm. like, okay, I can think I can heal one more now. I can feed thousands now, right?
Yeah.
But he wasn't going to bow down to the expectations that everyone was putting on him. And that's where, you know, I live with a woman right now. She's my wife, who,
well, that's,
yeah, I thought I'd throw that in there just to see if people were still
good
listening.
Good clarification.
Who's looking at me going, well, she's coming to some profound realizations about herself as an achiever, as a doer. Mm-hmm. She's an Enneagram 8 with a really high 3 and high 1. I mean, she can be a machine if she wants to be.
Yeah.
And she's realizing I'm taking stuff on voluntarily, or I'm saying yes to things that I know at the end of the day are going to leave me depleted and frustrated and not able to be present to the people that matter most in my life. And I don't know why I'm doing it.
Hmm.
So I'm going to stop. I'm going to say no to some of the good things so that I can choose the best things. And man, when you start making decisions from that, out of that place, you're going to really start ticking some people off because they're going to look at you and think you don't care, you're selfish, whatever. And you just have to know in your heart of hearts, like, I know who I am and I know whose I am and I'm good.
And well, and oftentimes, like, it's also worth recognizing there's some invisible audience syndrome coming on. A lot of times, most people aren't that interested in what's going on or care. You know, like, when they said, how are you doing? They were just doing a polite colloquialism. You know, they're
yes.
not everyone's constantly watching and observing you and needs to know how busy you are. But I do think there's a lot of value to that quality over quantity approach yeah. that, you know, you're talking about with Lindsay and others. And I think there's some really easy ways to apply that and simple methods. You know, whether that's taking a little bit more time for your health so that you have more energy and more mental.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, if I'm eating right and I'm exercising regularly, even if that's cutting into hours in other places, I'm actually more productive. And what I'm thinking, my brain is more capable of doing yeah. healthier, but like one of the things I've intentionally replaced Facebook with is, okay, I can spend an hour to 2 hours a day mindlessly scrolling Facebook and convincing myself I'm connecting with friends.
Right.
Or I can call my aunt and talk to her for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Which of those two activities is healthier connection?
Yeah.
And like that, there's probably a lot of value and a lot of us deconstructing. If you take 8 hours to do something that should take you two,
mm-hmm.
you should not be bragging about that.
Right. Right. Yeah. Less work is getting done. There's way less productivity, but we're spending more time doing the same things. And it's crazy.
And to be fair, you know, it's hard because they're cute kittens on YouTube. And mm-hmm. sometimes yeah. it's easy to go down that rabbit hole.
Cats.
Cats. So this is for sure going to be a two-parter, Patrick. We
That's okay.
We're over 50 minutes, and we still have another question, and I think it's worth still answering.
Let's do it.
So we've touched
Come
on
Come back
this.
Next week for part two.
We've touched on this a little bit, but how the heck do we prevent our kids from getting messed up by all of this absurd social media responsibility? And I can say our kids now, because dang it, I got one.
You got one. It changes things, doesn't it?
It makes, you know, that's when we had Ellie, that was the thing. It's like, oh crap.
Yeah.
All the things that are messed up, like we'd have to navigate that with her.
Yeah. And it's not to say that the same, you know, questions are not, don't have to be faced by, you know, people without kids. It's just a different dynamic now that you've got, little souls, little brains, little mm-hmm. who are, you know, hopefully going to be little husbands and wives one day if that's their calling in life. And so, having, again, working with students from all ages, I mean, including college and churches and schools. And I think there's a few points of action. So if you're a note taker, this is for you. Number one, the only people who will keep your kids from becoming engulfed in the wildfires of social media is you, the parent. Pastors can't do it. Teachers can't do it. It's going to be parents or grandparents, aunts, uncles, whoever's in charge. And if you don't know that you're in charge, you're in charge. Well, the kid is not.
And let's eliminate some weird thoughts out there, right?
Sure. Let's do it.
My child is entitled to privacy.
No, they're not.
No.
No. They don't have their own constitution. There's no Bill of Rights in my house. Yeah.
I mean, I would suggest social media is about the same responsibility level as driving a car.
So
you don't let a child just start driving suddenly with no supervision.
Well, and so I made this analogy back in when we did the parenting videos in lockdown of you give your kid a smartphone, it's like giving them a loaded gun and never teaching them responsibility and just hoping all goes well, you know, and there's not even a safety on this gun, mind you, like it has a really light trigger.
For lack of kids are dumb. Like, I'm not trying to be mean here, but like, okay, Ryan as a teenager, was a complete moron.
Talking about Ryan Hughes.
He also and would admit, but like I think back on myself as a teenager and some of my activities and some of my decision making abilities, and I think, oh, such a big dumb dummy. Fortunately, like we were just on the cusp of social media interactions when I was in like high school and stuff. Like the first phone I got when I was 16, texting was the big deal at that point, you know?
Think about how many people wouldn't be in their jobs today if camera phones and social media had existed back then. You know, it's already come up with some people, like Supreme Court justices trying to get, you know, and it's like, here's hearsay or here's testimony. Well, there would have been video, you know, like nobody would you know, so there's all of that.
Sorry, I'm just imagining like elections 20 years from now when it's like,
oh, there's no chance. Who gets elected?
This Instagram video from when you were 13 when you're lighting a firecracker off in your neighbor's mailbox.
Yeah. Remember when TikTok was a thing and you did this dirty dance? Like, oh, it's going to be a circus. It already is. But I've heard parents say, I don't want my kid to get, you know, made fun of. I don't want them to be like social outcasts. To which I would say all of that happens already with phones.
Yeah. So loneliness is not being decreased by social media.
That's right.
Being increased.
Yeah. And so I would say like there were less kids getting made fun of and less kids socially isolated when I was growing up because you didn't have the option of doing that even after school. Mm. Like you only really did it at school. And then you played with kids. You know, you played with friends or whatever. So, parents, be the parents, you know, like it's on you. The Lord is going to come at you at the end of the day, not Steve Jobs or whoever's making the stuff.
Yeah. And let's get a little counterintuitive here. Like one of the cons of having so much information and being so socially connected, is we can actually convince ourselves that the world is more dangerous now than it was 20, 30, 40. Like a lot of parents are scared to let their kids go play in a neighborhood or let their kids go off. Because we
hear all the stories.
We hear all the stories.
Yeah.
There's no statistical evidence that the world is more dangerous now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true.
Right. Yeah. Evil hearts have been around a long time.
So if you are convincing yourself as parents that you're protecting your child by keeping them in their house with a tablet where they have access to a world of danger.
Yeah.
We do have to start questioning those decisions at a certain point. And I'm, you know, whatever. It's easy for me to say. I have an 8-month-old. I haven't navigated it yet. I'm sure I'll mess up in a slew of very unintelligent ways as a parent.
Yeah, we all eat our words, no doubt. So there's that. I'd say, so take that responsibility. Two, resisting that social pressure to give your kids a smartphone. I have said, and I'll maintain it, I think junior year of high school is when a kid has enough brain capacity and life experience, if they've been parented well, to handle that responsibility. And even then, with some pretty firm guardrails, mm-hmm. of, you know, what are the time limits in which access shuts down? You know, when does the phone come into your possession as a parent? The phone never goes into the bedroom. You know, like all of those things. Those are other parts.
The unfortunate truth about that, though, is that if you ask that of your child, you have to also model that as a parent. That's the thing that Megan and I've been talking about. It's like, oh, crap, you know, we know we're going to institute a no phones after this time policy. That means we can't play Candy Crush after 7. Dang
it. Yeah. And we talk about that. Like, when, you know, where's our charging station going to be? And we're going to buy alarm clocks and not use our phones and, you know, all those things. So there's that. Get outside. How do you get your kids outside? Get outside with your kids of any age, really. You know, I mean, if you're in East Tennessee, listen to this, you need to be hiking and riding bikes and going to athletic events and ballets and whatever. Like, get out, you know, go do stuff together as a family that doesn't involve just consuming. That's huge. And that becomes a value. You know, I think that because we go on hikes with our kids and we go bike riding and, you know, we play ball or we do whatever, I think that'll be a value, you know, in their lives. I think they'll enjoy that. Could be wrong, but get outside, you know, that's another part.
Yeah. You and I can, again, because we were a little bit younger when a lot of this came along, are probably a bit more adept at it, can navigate it a little bit easier. If you are someone who's listening, who's like, I just don't even know how to manage a phone. I just don't. I would really encourage you to view the church as a resource, because we have, I mean, one of our members here, Jason Miller, owns Unbound Digital and is a wizard at monitoring devices and knowing how to access stuff and how to set phones up. And we can connect you with resources and people who know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
To whichever degree of guardrails you want to go to.
Yeah. The Tech Wise Family by Andy Crouch is another good resource of how to set up some healthy boundaries with that, no matter your age and stage. So, that's one thing I can't do is the like, well, I just don't know, therefore I don't. And that's like, hey, if that's you, there's no shame in that. It means you were raised probably in a purer generation, but you got to get in the know, and there are resources, so you can take heart in knowing that for sure.
Yeah. All right. We've talked over an hour, but I'll still ask the question, Patrick.
Yeah.
Any parting wisdom or advice before we've covered a slew of things in a lot of words, but I'll give you one more chance here.
Okay. Yeah. Two things. All right. So there's one less and there's one more. First thing I would ask, this is for followers of Jesus. If you happen to be listening to this and you are not a follower of Jesus, thank you for listening.
Please rate us on iTunes.
Yeah. You're off the hook on this one. This is for Jesus people. Be less offendable. That can sound arrogant. It's not. I'm offendable. But let's all be less offendable. Politically, religiously, personally, Why? Because our identity rests in one reality, namely that we are children of God. And we have nothing to prove. We have nothing to defend, nothing to earn. If someone criticizes me, I should be able to say, you have no idea. It's worse than you think. if someone thinks I'm incompetent, I can look at them and say, you honestly have not even scratched the surface of my incompetency.
If you only knew the depths.
like there's nothing there to defend. I'm dumber than you think. And it's not to be done in a fatalistic or self-pitiful way. It's acknowledging that apart from Jesus, I really do have nothing to offer. And the source of my strength, the source of my competency is my weakness, and that is a freedom in Christ, is to be able to confess that, to acknowledge it, and to live in that, and to know everything is not personal. There is just something in our spirits, a wound most likely from earlier in life that we've not identified or addressed, and someone's social media post or an article they've shared or something that's said in a sermon triggers that wound. And we've been trained, and we've trained ourselves over the years by habit to defend, to attack, and to demonize. And y'all, let's be less offendable, and I think more honest with ourselves. And this is the question: to be less offendable when I feel my blood pressure rising, I feel like, oh, I'm going to start, I need to attack, to just pause and go, why is this bothering me? What's the issue here? Is there a fear? Is there an insecurity? Is there possibly something in my life that I've made too important, that I have forged into an idol? And which I think is ultimately what tends to be really common, that we forge our idols, whether they're religious or political or ideological, and because we've attached this imbalanced importance to it, we feel like we have to defend.
Yeah, but Patrick, it's so much easier to just blame the other person than to have to self-assess and recognize self-fault.
It worked for Adam in the beginning, right? I'll just blame. Yeah, but that question, why is this bothering me? That has kept me from replying to so many things on Facebook. And it has caused me to delete a lot of tweets that I had written, ready to send. And I've never done that and not sent something or not replied and thought, oh, I really regret that. Unfortunately, I do feel like I've not posted things that I feel really strongly about and convicted of, for fear that it's just going to get interpreted the wrong way and it's going to offend people, and I hate having to live like that. It's a reality.
Yeah.
But that's one: be less offendable. The second thing I'd say, be more humble. Ephesians 4:2, be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. I'm all about some Ephesians 4 right now and what it looks like. But in every conversation, every disagreement, someone's wrong.
Yeah.
We're all wrong about something in our conversations. On every side, like no one person, no one group has the corner on truth, and everyone else is just out of luck, but that's just how things get heralded in our day, whether social media or news or social issues, we're in the church. It's this or that.
Yeah.
And man, that's just, it's been hard to watch, and I've been a part of it. I've been a part of the problem. And so I think of us looking and going, okay, Jesus embodied absolute truth, and yet he still didn't blast people who disagreed, even when he knew they were wrong. He asked questions, which helped them go, oh, this was my bias. And what's fascinating is when they double down knowing they're wrong, like they get defensive or they bow up or they posture, and ultimately they just want to kill him. He doesn't keep going and go. He just backs off. He just walks away. It's like, you just got to know, okay, I've done what I can do here. I need to go to a different soil.
Yeah.
That's
tough. Some wisdom I'll share from Sunday school with teenagers yesterday. Yeah, spoiler, we record these on Monday, not Tuesday. is especially in the church and amongst Christians, I think it is good to use this question as a barometer for whether or not this your outrage is worthwhile.
Hmm.
Would this issue be important to Jesus?
Hmm. Yeah.
So when we argue about the highly important things that we think are important in the church, like what kind of music we're going to play on Sunday, and we don't focus on things like, are the poor in our community mm-hmm. being fed?
Yeah. Do people have access to basic health needs, and are their floors falling through in their houses? And yeah.
I am haunted by that question often. You know, and I have to be honest with myself regularly, like, oh yeah, this really important thing to me, that's not all that important.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. Well, thank you, Patrick.
So does that bring it to a close?
I think so. You know, it's been over an hour. Thank you for this conversation. Hey, it just means that I don't have to record a podcast next week. That's, you know, that's the good thing.
You're welcome.
And thank all of you, especially if you've listened to both parts of this. You know, and if you're on iTunes, please give us a rating, a 5-star rating and a review. That'll help spread things around. And if you want to keep up with all of Crossroads activities and find more content, we're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can find us by searching Crossroads Christian. There are all kinds of content for adults, kids, and teenagers. But more than all that, please make the most of the rest of your 167 hours. Have a great week.